You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 342 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rolvin, coming to you live on this fine Monday evening. It's still pretty early in the evening, so a couple of things that we're going to get to are not up to date through the games that you'll probably be following on Monday night, but I just have that in the back of your mind as a caveat as we sort of bounce around to two main topics on this fine podcast, one of which is an NBA draft checkup, and the other one is a sort of a projections slash outlook for the Hawks in terms of the big picture and the NBA draft in terms of placement and seeding and all that fun stuff. So a bit of a smorgasbord of a show on this fine evening, but with two games on the horizon back to back, want to touch on some stuff big picture before we break down the next two games in those particular podcasts. So we'll start things off by talking about the draft in a little bit. There were a couple of new mock drafts that came to light on Monday that I trust and that I want to follow and sort of consume with some good intel. The first one came from The Athletic. That is a good friend of the program, Sam Vecenie. Sam has the Hawks actually having the number one pick overall and taking DeAndre Ayton. He also has them taking Melvin Frazier from Tulane at number 24 and Landry Shamet from Wichita State at number 29, Jerome Robinson from Boston College at 31. Of course, it probably goes without saying at this point in time, but mock drafts are a very inexact science, especially right now in February. Once the draft order is actually set, you start getting a little bit better intel, but with college basketball still in flux and, of course, seating nowhere near finalized, these are pretty much guesses, and to say we'd be the first person to tell you that, but some good sort of theoretical info here on these guys in terms of, Melvin Frazier is a guy who's sort of off the radar, but a 3-and-D player from Tulane, not really convinced that he's a high-level jump shooter just yet. And if he actually was, he'd be probably even a higher pick than this. A good athlete would be a nice Hawks University candidate. Landry Shamet, guy from that I've always liked from Wichita State. I really love his game, honestly, but I would say he wouldn't be the greatest fit in the world with Luka Doncic, who we'll get to in a second, but with Ayton as the pick at number one, he makes some sense. Shamet's a really good shooter, can defend, and really kind of gives good effort on the end of the floor, sort of a positionless player. He basically plays point guard a lot of the time for Wichita State. I'm not sure he's actually a point guard at the NBA level because he's not the greatest athlete in the world, but something to file away there. And I'm not as familiar with Jerome Robinson, candidly, but seen him a few times. His numbers are very, very good right now for Boston College. I'll probably need to watch him a little bit more, but that's of course the Hawks' second round draft pick, which is going to be a very valuable pick because even if the Hawks get hot here and win, which we'll talk about here in a second, that pick's still going to be in the top 36, 37, and that's a very valuable pick, especially when compared to a lot of the other second round picks. Most time with second rounders, you get outside the top 40 or 45, it gets to be kind of a wasteland. But if you get in the high to mid 30s. That's a pretty interesting pick on a lot of levels. The other mock draft that actually came to light was from Sports Illustrated, Jeremy Wu, a very respected writer, somebody I follow along quite closely and trust his opinion. He has the Hawks number two overall in terms of the draft order, taking Luka Doncic, which is, of course, something that we've talked about quite a bit. Raleigh Alkins from Arizona at number 24 overall, and Trayvon Duval from Duke at number 29 overall. Alkins has been a favorite of mine for a while. I actually thought he might be a good second-round target at one point, but he's been playing quite well recently for Arizona. He might be climbing into the first round, probably a 3-and-D type of guy more than anything else, but because he missed a lot of the beginning of the season this year, there's been some division on him, but I think he's played quite well. A guy who's a really good athlete who I would like to see the Hawks target in that late first round range. Trayvon Duval was a guy who a lot of people thought, probably including myself, that he might be a lottery pick or even higher than that this year, but his jump shot's just not there. He absolutely cannot shoot, and that's why he's not a lottery pick, frankly. Also, his decision-making has been pretty bad at times for Duke this season. He's a very talented player. You can definitely see when he's on how good he could be, but he's probably a late first-rounder at this point in time. That might be a good project for the Hawks to take at number 29 overall. A few guys that I want to at least mention that I'm taking a look at or keeping an eye on if I'm the Hawks. With those late first round picks would be Bruce Brown from Miami is a guy I like a lot. Shake Milton from SMU, a combo guard type, a 3-and-D kind of player. De'Anthony Melton, who isn't actually playing for USC at the moment, but a guy I really like and could slip because he's not putting anything on tape for this year. Jalen Brunson from Villanova, who might be the national player of the year runner-up to Trae Young. That's a guy who probably will be a second round pick, but for me, he's safe enough as a I think he's going to be a quality backup point guard for a long time in the NBA, sort of in that Frank Mason mold of last year. You know, Mason was the national player of the year, you know, at least a candidate throughout. And it's one of those things where everybody kind of agreed that he was not going to be a first round pick, but he looks the part, at least to me, as a backup in the NBA. And that's a guy who is valuable. If you can get that guy at number 29 overall, if you have the Rockets pick and pick a guy that you think is going to be a long-term quality backup, that is worth that kind of investment. And finally, Ohio State's Cade Bates Diop, a fast rising player, legitimate wing size. He's 6'7", he's legitimate, you know, small forward, maybe even some small ball four kind of size for him moving forward. I like that kind of group of guys a lot. This is a draft that's really rich on those combo guard types and maybe some 3-and-D players later in the first round. And most of the guys, as you mentioned there, are the guys that I actually kind of like. So we'll keep an eye on a lot of this. There's, you know, there's 7, 8, 9, 10 guys that we just mentioned briefly that the Hawks could be targeting in the 20s. As a little bit of background, if you're not a diehard Hawks fan, just somebody on the podcast, the Hawks do have the Minnesota Timberwolves first round pick, which is very, very likely to convey. That's a lottery protected pick. So all the Wolves have to do is make the playoffs. And as of this moment, they're basically a 99% chance to do that because they've played well for this long. You know, coming into the year, it wasn't necessarily a stone-cold lock that they would make the playoffs, but as of now, they're projected to win 48 games by 538. That gives them a 98% chance of making the playoffs, and it would be a huge surprise if they fall at this point. And also, the Hawks have the Houston Rockets first-round pick. The Rockets, that is a top-three protected pick, so that pick is absolutely coming. But unfortunately for the Hawks, the Rockets are very, very good. In fact, they're only a half game or maybe a full game, as you're listening to this, as Warriors play later tonight. But very close to having the number one seed overall in the Western Conference. That's how good the Rockets have been. So that pick's going to be somewhere in the 28, 29, 30 range. So it's definitely coming, and it's one of those things that's a positive. The Hawks are going to have three first-round picks, which is very, very appetizing if you are a rebuilding team. You have three first rounders and your own second as a high second round pick, but at the same time, you know, nothing premium about those other two first round picks, but they are coming over, which is probably the name of the game, especially the Minnesota pick, given that the Hawks traded Adrian Payne, who is now out of the league, basically. In order to get that pick, that ends up being a huge win. Even though the Hawks missed on the pick originally, they get the pick for him, and that's a good way to bail out of that trade in an effective manner. And that pick is definitely coming at this point, you know, barring some sort of utter disaster. For me, just a couple of draft thoughts to get to, sort of at the top of the draft. Obviously, no surprise to see Ayton and Doncic mocked to the Hawks in those two mock drafts. For me, those two guys are in a two-player tier at this moment in time. I'd probably take Doncic number one at this moment in time. That's just for me. I still like his game quite a bit, and there's a little bit of an emphasis for me on his position, just because the Hawks got, you know, most NBA teams, you want to have your best player or your primary facilitator be a wing. I like Doncic a lot. I think he's by far the safest player in this class. That doesn't mean that he's going to have the highest upside. I think Ayton pretty clearly has the highest upside in the entire draft. For me, he's an absolute monster. If he hits his absolute ceiling, he should be the number one pick in this class. But there's definitely more risk there with Doncic. I can't see a scenario where he's not a quality NBA player for a long time. And, you know, that's not exactly appetizing for a lot of people at number one overall, but that kind of safety is something that I value. So I like Doncic quite a bit, but those two guys are kind of in a tier by themselves. From there, you know, obviously the Hawks could slip out, and we'll talk about that here in a second, but that next tier after those guys is probably a five, maybe six player tier for me. Marvin Bagley of Duke, Trae Young of Oklahoma, Jaren Jackson Jr. of Michigan State, Michael Porter Jr. of Missouri, and Mo Bamba of Texas for sure, and then you get Colin Sexton of Alabama as probably that number eight guy for me, sort of in that hybrid tier between tier number two and tier number three. I think there is a gap after that. You have guys like Miles Bridges and Wendell Carter and Mikal Bridges, the guys that I do like in that class. But hopefully, you know, barring the Hawks going on a massive win streak here, they're going to land somewhere in that top five, six, seven picks, even if it's a disastrous draft lottery night for Atlanta. So they'll have an opportunity to grab one of these players that I mentioned. A lot of time to dissect them, but just sort of want to update people. People ask me all the time kind of where I am on these guys, and that's probably because you have a pretty good example of that. I don't think the Hawks are really in that danger of landing outside the top seven without some serious shenanigans in the lottery, but I think a lot of people are higher on Marvin Bagley and Trae Young than I am, frankly. I think those guys are probably in that second tier. You know, Young is definitely awesome as a college player and has crazy numbers. I'm not necessarily fully bought in yet as a top tier prospect. Defensively, it's going to be very, very rough for him at the NBA level. I'm not necessarily convinced about his floor being all that high. I think there's some bust potential there. That's not a shot at him. It's just one of those things where it's kind of, it's a hit and miss thing. There's been some Jimmer Fredette comparisons. There's been some Steph Curry comparisons. It's probably going to be somewhere in the middle of those two guys, obviously, but we'll see what happens there with Trae Young. Marvin Bagley, his defense has been quite bad. I still like him, but it's definitely a concern. I think it's actually worse than John Collins has been at the college level. And as you might remember, if you're a long-time listener, I was very critical of Collins' defense at the college level. I think Bagley's actually been even worse than Collins. Fortunately, Duke has had Wendell Carter to sort of back him up a little bit. I do think Bagley's energy and his rebounding, and it's just his ability to get buckets will allow him to be a good NBA player. At the same time, though, there is some risk there that I'm not sure people are definitely seeing. You know, Michael Porter Jr. is sort of the X factor in this class. Haven't seen him all season. He's not played all year, but I saw him a little bit at the high school level, AAU circuit, that kind of stuff. His back issue is the big question. If he's healthy, he certainly belongs in this tier, and we'll see sort of how those medicals look. And finally, Jaren Jackson and Mo Bamba. Jackson is easily the least sexy player of this group, but he's so polished defensively already as a freshman that he's tantalizingly good on the end of the floor. It's pretty interesting to me. He's definitely a very skilled offensive player too. Not huge numbers at the college level, so I'm sure a lot of people are going to be questioning that him being in this group. But I absolutely love Jackson Jr. I think he's very safe. He's going to be a good NBA player at the very least, and I value that as well. Bamba. His offensive upside is not probably huge. He gets that Rudy Gobert comparison. I'm not sure I would be projecting that on him defensively just because Gobert is kind of a freak as to how good he is. But Bamba is a very interesting player, and it's all about kind of what you prioritize in the draft. So those are some quick hitters there. We're definitely going to come back to that as we get into plenty of time between now, basically about 4 months now to talk about the draft. But those are my quick hitters at the moment. Before we get out of here, though, one more thing to hit on. That's some projection systems in terms of the Hawks and where they'll finish this season. 538 as of before Monday's games had the Hawks projected to finish 25-57 in a tie with Sacramento and one game ahead of the Phoenix Suns, who I think are the worst team in the league right now. The Suns are there playing really bad right now. There are eight teams, though, within 5 games of each other, and the projections that actually could even become 9 if the Knicks fall off, because New York, without Porzingis, is pretty ugly at this point in time. They do have a pretty big lead on the rest of that pack, but there's definitely an 8-team tier here and a potential 9th with the Knicks. Number Fire is a little bit more optimistic on the Hawks, just kind of in terms of everybody. They have projected the Hawks for 28 wins, but that's still third worst in the league ahead of only the Kings and the Suns. And TeamRankings.com has the Hawks at 26-56, again third worst ahead of the Kings and the Suns. So I guess the Kings and the Suns are seen as the widespread contenders in terms of the statistical projections. I would certainly add Memphis as a brutal team in terms of the way that they're playing right now. Brooklyn has been awful recently. Chicago is back to struggling. And I mentioned the Knicks, and I think the Mavs are probably better than those teams, but sort of a lot of things are in play. So a lot of Hawks fans starting to freak out a little bit here. And I understand that. In some ways, I wish the Hawks had tanked harder in the offseason when they went out and signed Dwayne Dedman and Ursula Nesova to contracts, brought Mike Muscala back. That was sort of a red flag for me that they were not going to be quite as bad as some Hawks fans wanted them to be. And that's sort of coming to fruition right now, especially when you saw the way they played on Sunday. If they play that way all the time, the top 2-3 picks are probably out the window, barring some lottery luck. Still, I don't think they're that good, frankly. It's just one of those things where they're not quite as bad as some of the tanking enthusiasts want them to be at this point in time. I think, though, if the Hawks play the similar rotation that they did on Sunday and stay relatively healthy, they're probably more going to be in that high 20s range in terms of win total than they are in the low to mid 20s. It's all going to come down to some ping pong balls and how they break in mid-May when the lottery occurs. But I just want to say that out loud. And just as a little bit of a backdrop for that, Marco Bellinelli, I sort of famously killed in terms of his defense and his impact on the Hawks and how the Hawks would be better off without him. One stat that I uncovered in terms of talking back and forth today with Kale Chenard on Twitter, the Hawks played more than 1,500 minutes this season with Bellinelli not on the court. And in those minutes, the Hawks have a positive net rating. They are plus 0.9 points per 100 possessions without him on the floor. And if you take into account just how bad the Hawks have been on a grand scale, if you just take Bellinelli off the team, I'm not sure there's something to be a 500 club, but still, it's definitely noteworthy to see just how much of an impact. The Hawks were minus 10.1 with him on the court. So we'll see. Now that Bellinelli's off the team, and I think presumably Miles Plumlee is out of the rotation, the Hawks could be a little bit dangerous. On the bright side, if you are a tanking enthusiast, the Hawks' schedule in March is very brutal, so that probably helps. And they have a top five most difficult schedule, according to a couple of metrics, the rest of the way, so that definitely helps the cause. But some uncertainty, to be sure. There's no reason to panic or like jump off a building just yet in terms of the Hawks finishing with 30 wins or something like that. But at the same time, the separation just isn't there. So, you know, the Hawks have been routinely in the bottom three pretty much all season long in terms of actual record. I'm not sure that's going to be locked in necessarily, but for me, it's still a top two tier with Doncic and Ayton. And then on the bright side, though, if you are a Hawks fan that's worried, I think guys from 3 to 7 or 3 to 8 are all kind of in the same tier. So it's not as if you are having this huge drop off after 2, but ideally, of course, you don't want the Hawks to finish in that top 2 so they can get the guys that I believe at least are the top 2 players by a pretty wide margin. So stay tuned for obviously a lot of draft talk in the next couple of months, but I want to take a little bit of an opportunity. It's been a hot topic with a couple of mock drafts coming out. And of course, the All-Star break arriving that we'll talk about some draft more in the very near future. I think during the All-Star break, we're going to have at least one show that's highly focused on the draft. So stay tuned for that. But please subscribe to the podcast. If you've not done that already, I really appreciate it if you would listen. And of course, we'll get back to a more quote-unquote normal schedule. The Hawks are in Milwaukee on Tuesday, and then they're in Detroit to finish up the, quote, first half on Wednesday. Of course, it's not the first half at all, but before the All-Star break, the last game is Wednesday in Detroit. So we'll have plenty to talk about that. Please stay tuned and check us out. Subscribe, you know, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, all those fun places. And if nothing else, we'll see you guys tomorrow with a wrap-up of the Bucks game. So stay tuned for that.